Holy cow. Unbelievable. If you haven't left your house yet, I got to tell you, it is incredible outside. Ever wondered what it was like in heaven? You know, heaven is a place where you live on the clouds, right? Well, when you go outside right now, you're going to find out, because there's very heavy fog. Very heavy fog, and it's like being inside of a cloud. So I guess in heaven, you're supposed to be on top of the cloud. But the 6th of January, and I'm not kidding. I mean, I don't think that when I was driving over here, it certainly wasn't 100 feet of visibility. It was more like 50 feet. And you should see some of the pictures of the road between here and El Paso. Unbelievable. So just be very, very careful out there is all I'm saying, I guess. But it's probably the heaviest fog I've seen since I've been here. 37 degrees, by the way. And we did get have had rain for the last couple of days, of course. All right, so yesterday, kind of a spirited session with Mike McKay and then with Walt Rubel, in which I was accused by various people of cutting others off, being insensitive, rude, not allowing others to finish their point. You know, the kind of thing that you get a little bit of extra attention for in preschool, kindergarten. But I don't know. I think we all agree at some point people need to be cut off. The question is when. I found that sometimes it's better earlier rather than later on phone calls. Because here's my challenge to you. If you call up, make your main point immediately. Don't start a narrative. Don't kind of like try to roll into it, because you know that's the nature of radio. Radio can be exciting, it can be boring. That's all there is to it. We got a phone call here. Thanks for the call. All right, so somebody just called up and cut themselves off. But here's the thing. Everybody wants an interesting show, and part of an interesting show is calls that don't go on too long. So we're all on the same page on that. All right. So one of the things that came up yesterday, and you know, there was some various things that came up, but one of the things that I was thinking about later was there is this debate that's going on out there. If it's not going on in the media in general, it's just because I think we have a certain kind of a media, but I think it certainly is going on in the minds of the citizens and residents of America. And the question is, I'm just going to lay it out there like I did yesterday at the start of the second hour, is the president a Muslim? Now, that's an infuriating question for a lot of liberals, probably most liberals. But my point to Walt was, as you recall, if you're listening in, is that there has to be a reason that this incredible number of people out there, and what Walt really didn't get into, he mentioned that I think it's a third of Republicans believe that the president's a Muslim. But I think it's almost 20% of Democrats who believe he's a Muslim. I mean, it's like a large percentage of people out there. And, you know, that's like a quarter. I think it's that I was just Googling it to see if my memory was correct. But I think that's approximately right. And so for people on the left, that's an opportunity for them to laugh at those either on the left or on the right. Okay. And all right. It's even worse than I thought. But it's an opportunity for liberals to do what they love doing best, is to look down at people and laugh at them, scorn them, shake their head, kind of cluck, you know, speak, you know. So to me, if I was working for the president, God forbid, this would be a problem for me. It's not. It wouldn't be a problem because the country's so stupid that they can't understand the president is a Christian. I think it was Karen who called up and said, "I've been around Christians my whole life, and I've never seen one that was like Barack Obama." And my argument was that basically people go off their instincts. You know, you're given information about other people. And sometimes it's through admissions by the people, statements by people. And then there's this thing, you know, body language and emotional intelligence and all this stuff. There's different ways that people pick up information. And a lot of what people believe comes out of their impressions, you know. Just because the president gets up and says, "I'm a Christian, I'm not a Muslim," doesn't mean that he is a Christian or not a Muslim, number one. And number two, it doesn't mean that people are going to sit there and, you know, I mean, but maybe it's obvious, the liberal definition of a Christian is a person who says they're a Christian. And there's no depth to the definition of any kind. And it's just, I find it very strange. But anyway, here is the article from The Hill, and it's even much worse than I thought it was. But this is a problem for the Democratic Party. It is a problem for Obama. It is also a problem for Americans. But I mean, 43% of Republicans believe Obama is a Muslim. That's inching towards almost half. But 29% of Americans believe Obama is a Muslim. To me, that's a staggering amount of somebody who's been in office for 7 years. That can't be, you can't just write that off. You can't just say, Republicans are stupid. They don't know what it means to be a Christian. I mean, right? I mean, the party between the Democrats and the Republicans, the party that is the most self-identified to be a Christian is the Republican Party. So how can you possibly say, therefore, and people that practice it, go to church, read the Bible, know other people that are Christians, hang out with Christians, talk about Christianity, Christ, God, all this stuff. How do you take that group of people and say they don't know anything about what it means to be a Christian? They're idiots. They're uneducated. They don't know what they're talking about. It's a laughing stock. Of course, the president's a Christian. All right, I just want to get that out there because that's what we got into yesterday. 5-2-3-14-50. There is some other stuff going on out there. Let me get you some headlines here for just a moment. And one of the headlines that I'm holding in my hand right now in the Sun News is County Sheriff seeks trial in lawsuit. And Doniana County Sheriff Enrique Kiki V. Hill has retained an attorney and is seeking a court trial in a civil case connected to his agency's temporary takeover of the county detention center on December the 8th. And his attorney is Gene N. Chavez, who I don't know. But anyway, that's one of your stories. Another top story off the front page. Governor Martinez is proposing a budget, including a package with a $101 million for education. By the way, I'm feeling better, but I think my voice might sound a little bit worse today. But anyway, all right. So, and we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, it's Tom. You need a nice big cup of coffee there, Kelly, to wash down that phlegm. Obama said that Muslims helped form this country.
Really?
You know, remember he said Muslims were there with the founding fathers?
I think I may have heard that in passing, but it was so stupendously ridiculous that I didn't pay any attention to. But here, I was thinking about this morning because I was thinking yesterday, I found the topic kind of invigorating yesterday because it taps into who the president is, just as opposed to what he says. But I find it, and this is always the case, I find it absolutely fascinating to watch liberals when they react to GOP Republicans, Christians, or just general people on saying, I don't know what the president believes, or I think that he's a Muslim. The reaction is instantaneous. Oh my God. It's like, haven't you heard the news flash? The president had a full blown conversion last week and was baptized in the National Mall. I mean, that it's on that level, you know? So I don't get this outrage and this astonishment. It seems to me that would be like saying, you know, like accusing someone of having not been a Boy Scout. It's like this club that you sign yourself into. It's so much further beyond that, as well to be a Muslim.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard that he wears a ring that has the crescent on it of Islam?
I've heard that, and I saw a picture, but it's been a while since I thought about it. But supposedly, they had this a series of pictures that showed increasing close-ups on his hand, and then you could see this ring. But I've got to look that up again.
Okay. All right, Kelly.
Thanks, Tom. Have a good day. All right. So, and we got another call. Thanks for the call. Who's this?
Yeah, good morning. This is Edward.
Edward, hold on one second. I got another call. Thanks for the call. This is Kelly. I'll be right back. Go ahead, Edward.
Yeah, remember, I lived in a Muslim country.
Yes, I remember that.
What happened is when you're born as a Muslim, you have to have an Islamic name, which is like Hussein, Ali, Muhammad, all those names that you cannot put a, you know, non-Muslim name.
Right.
And if you notice, he's got the name Hussein, which he doesn't use.
Right.
They keep saying, you know, Barack Obama, but it's Hussein. So that is an indication, one of the indications that if you're Islamic, you cannot have a different name. See, in the United States, we have a lot of Christians that they are Ali or other names, Muhammad. Or,
right.
You know, but if you go out of the country, there's not the melting pot. The majority are, you know, Muslims. And if you are born as a Muslim, you cannot use a name like, you know, Christian name.
Right.
So that's why they have to have a name like
Muhammad and the president,
or Ali.
The president, the president obviously has a Muslim name. He doesn't use it.
You never see a Christian.
I've got
a name.
Thanks for the call. All right, folks, when you call in, please listen. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Karen.
Yeah, Karen, go ahead.
I wanted to touch on something Walt said just before the show ended, right after I called in, that gal called after I did. He just poo-pooed what I had to say and what the other woman had to say. And basically he said that I take it as that we are just so stupid.
Yeah.
That we cannot think for ourselves, nor do what we see is actual. Because he said that, no, what I was saying is because I've been reading WorldNet Daily, because I think he said WND, which is an internet site. And that's what happens with the libs, that they don't take us as rational, educated people who can think for ourselves and comment on what we observe. They can, but we can't. And I just found that fascinating, that everybody that was calling in, he just said, oh, that's ridiculous. And then Frankie called in and basically did the same thing. How stupid are we? And that's usually what happens with these people, that they don't ever take what we say as rational, but what they say is certainly rational, and we're just idiots.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what I'm saying. That I was kind of tapping into that same thing. It to me so amazing that exactly. I would just be restating what you said, but I do find that interesting that the people who are actual practitioners of this movement are the ones that have the least credibility on deciding if anybody else is or may be a Christian.
Right. And you know, if you go back to 43, Bush, most of these people, if you remember Peter Goodman on his show, they mercilessly slammed Bush. And I'm not here to stick up for Bush, but I mean, I remember Peter Goodman calling him a drunk, saying, you know, currently he is a drunk. And they were just brutal to him.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely a different way to view things between both sides.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call, Karen. Hey, drive safe out there.
Okay. Bye.
All right, bye. All right, folks. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connor. Mm-hmm. Who's this?
This is Ted.
Yeah.
Nobody's saying that Obama keeps a prayer rug in the umbrella closet on Air Force One, but look at his actions.
That's it.
He just about single-handedly installed the Muslim Brotherhood over there in Egypt.
Hey,
that
Ted,
was on front
Ted,
line last night.
Ted, do you remember when the Muslim Brotherhood was removed by the Supreme Court of Egypt, how upset Obama got?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's why I don't understand why there hasn't been more of a movement in this country to remove Obama from office, because the decision making that he has been involved in has been so disastrous.
He sold more guns than Samuel Colt. He's the only guy that's won a Nobel Prize that has a hit list. What's Christian about him?
Well, I don't know anything. I got to take a break, but thanks for the call. All right, folks. All right, so we'll take a break here, but there's one thing I wanted to, the gentleman that called up that said he was raised in a Muslim country. I want to get back to one thing that he said. I've got a lot more today, but I wanted to not miss that because I thought it was an interesting debate. Kelly O'Connell on AM Las Cruces 1450, KOBE 523-1450. We'll be right back. It's Kelly.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, who's this?
My name is Joel Juarez. I would just like to comment on something you said.
Oh, okay. What are we going to talk about, by the way?
Yeah, when you said that here in the United States, the politicians are not doing the will of the governed.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know,
all right.
They're not governing.
Okay. Well, I'll put you on hold, okay?
Okay.
We're talking like 2 minutes.
Okay.
Thanks. too. All right, we've got a phone call from Joelle, and Joelle wanted to make a point about this American idea that the politicians represent the voice of the people. Joelle, go ahead.
Yes, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
I really appreciate you. I appreciate your show very much.
Thank you.
And I thank you for speaking out for the average citizen. The thing is that I'm be looking at since I've been voting in 1990, is that the politicians, they never do what the people vote put them in office for. They always come out with some other agenda. They campaign under one topic or several topics, and they just win the vote. And then when they're in office, they just ignore the people, you know, and whoever voted for them, oh, well, you know, too bad.
Yeah, and that's what we had talked about yesterday with I talked about that with Walt, and Walt became very animated. He became almost outraged at the idea that I would suggest that these politicians were not trying to do what they had promised in their campaign, platform.
Yeah, I was very angry at Obama when he sent all that billions of dollars to the Middle East so they can make a bomb and throw it back at us, you know.
Well,
you know, nobody's saying anything about that, you know.
You know.
And like I say, in the Bible, it says that you know somebody by their fruits, you know, by their actions. Actions speak louder than words, you know.
Yeah, you could also.
I would just suggest, that Americans wake up soon, you know, and smell the roses, because these politicians are taking over our lives and our constitution and our way of life. And we don't do something about it quick, you know, it's all going to go to hell.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks for the call, Joelle. Good points. All right, folks. Work with me if you call in. A little bit of back and forth. Okay, so, all right. I thought it was surreal when Walt was saying that all of these politicians, they do go and advocate in Washington, D.C. You just never hear about it or whatever. I don't think that's true. Here's the thing. All right. You're a politician. What's your purpose in life? For you as a politician, it's to survive. It's to get up to the, you know, it's to get from the city council to the state senate to the U.S. Congress, you know, to U.S. House to the U.S. Senate. That's what all these people would aspire to. It's to survive and keep going. For the people, the aspirations of the people are that the politician would go to Washington and no matter what, stand up for what the people believe. And that's why I don't think it's a terrible, like, people act like it's this terrible thing that Trump is getting up and speaking for what a lot of people, a lot of, you know, average Americans feel, but don't believe they can share with in public. I don't think it's a terrible thing. I think it's a great thing. I bear in mind, though, I mean, I'm not saying that I agree with everything Donald Trump says, but I think the reason that people are so enthusiastic about him is that he's not afraid to speak his mind, that he goes after these real kind of these issues that are the most important to Americans. We don't want to make a deal with Iran to our harm. And it's the same thing in reaction to the deal that it is to whether Obama's a Christian. If you don't understand that this is a great deal for America, you're an idiot. You're a buffoon. You should be laughed out of the room, or you don't know what's in the deal, or you don't understand deal making. I mean, I think of all of the people I've ever seen in terms of deal makers, I think Obama's the worst. And do you remember this really bizarre thing that happened right after he got into office? He canceled the Polish, I believe it was the Polish missile system to defend Poland. And then when Obama was talking to the president of Russia, and he accidentally gets recorded saying, "Well, just be patient, because after I get reelected, I can help you guys." You know, we're talking about a country that used to be our worst enemy, and he's saying off the record, "Be patient, and I'm going to get reelected, and then I'll give you what you want." I mean, just stuff like that is so unnerving to hear about. And there have been so many incidents in Obama's career, like when he got mad at Egypt for throwing out the Muslim Brethren. Are you kidding? The Muslim Brethren is like the fount. It's like the fount of all of these other groups. It is a radical Sharia oriented organization that would have destroyed Egypt. It would have destroyed the democracy, and the president that went in there lied. And they were bringing in a radical government, and so the army took over, and the Supreme Court threw these guys out, and Barack Obama threw a fit. Why wasn't there documentary after documentary about this to explore why exactly Obama is emotionally attached to the Muslim Brethren? Or is it just that he supports democracy so much, but it doesn't matter what democracy or so-called democracy supposedly produces? And I was thinking about this last night. You know, Obama gets on TV and he cries about guns and Sandy Hook and everything. And just like, it's like he's failed at his job in a lot of measurements. He's failed. And he wants to bring in gun control. And I'm thinking it's because he says he doesn't want people killed. He doesn't want children killed. How many children were killed in Syria when he didn't follow through on his promise? He could have stopped the civil war there. How many people? Hundreds of thousands. And then when the refugees are coming out of a situation that he arguably was as much responsible for anybody on the planet, then he starts giving guilt trips to the people that don't want to bring him in, even though everybody agrees some of them could be ISIS members. It's surreal. And the big fault in this whole thing is the media. They never connect the dots for people, never keep a record. They always protect him. It's just so frustrating. It's no wonder the country's going down, you know. 635 AM, Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, 523-1450. And folks, this is not about politics. It's about survival. I thought I'd take it.
Oh, hello. I heard your comment about Obama like crying, and I was going to say that he didn't cry for the American that was beheaded, and he didn't cry for the Christians that have been killed and raped. I think his tears are fake.
I do too. Can I put you on a hold so you can say that?
Yeah, sure.
What's your first name?
Becca.
Oh, well, we'll be back on in 30 seconds. I won't put you on hold. I didn't actually see the clip. I just saw a picture of him with the tears.
Yeah.
I didn't want to even watch it, to be honest. I want to get sick to my stomach.
Yeah, it is. It's just sickening.
Yeah. It's surreal, the stuff that he's gotten away with. The media refuses to hold him to any standards.
I know. It's terrible.
Absolutely terrible. We're on the air.
We have to take our country back.
We're on the air.
Okay.
We have Becca here. Thanks for the call, Becca. And you wanted to comment on the president's tears and the fact that he didn't cry for Americans in the past.
That's right. I saw that. And he had tears for, you know, getting his gun thing passed. But he didn't cry when the American was beheaded. He went and played golf. He didn't cry about all of the Christian women that have been raped, killed, and I think it's bizarre.
It is bizarre, and I think that this president doesn't realize how badly he's failed. I mean, I think that he sees himself as achieving deception at the highest level, which I do believe he did deceive people to get into the office, all of the broken promises, but people see through him. They don't trust his tears. I don't even think people in the Democratic Party or liberals trust his tears.
It's terrible.
It is terrible. It's just absolutely, it's so bizarre. I mean, he's played this thing out for 8 years. He's such an amateur. Go back to the title of that book written by Edward Klein. What an amateur he is and how he hasn't learned on the job. And now he thinks he's going to stand up there and cry in front of the camera, and that is somehow going to make this bill, this gun bill, or it's not even a bill, it's a presidential decree that could just be canceled. Totally misunderstands the position of the presidency.
He does. He really does. He has no leadership skills at all. None.
He's a demotivator. He's a judger. He's a person who says, don't bother trying to drill your way out of the oil crisis. It's never going to happen. While people are actually working, while he's giving that speech, there's people out there in Texas, West Texas, digging in the ground and fracking and bringing more and more oil up so we become the number one oil producer again, while he's giving that speech.
Yes, I know.
Absolutely
he's bizarre.
He is a bizarre and a very troubled and troubling person. Thanks for the call, Becca. All right, I wanted to mention something. I told you guys I was going to mention a couple of stories. Number one, there's an ape out there named Coco, and they taught Coco sign language when Coco was a little ape, whatever little apes are called. And a chimp is a baby ape. A chimp. A chimp is a separate species. Anyway, all right. So they asked that Coco, the sign language gorilla, what Coco thought about the new year. And Coco said that he wanted the earth protected. Now, what I find hard to believe about this, other than the fact that I think it's an absolute lie, is that's an abstract thought, you know? Right? I mean, it's a thought that would take a little depth, you know? And so not only was Coco taught sign language, but Coco is saying, please stop global warming in its essence. January the 4th, Coco wants to save the planet. Evolutionarynews.org. Coco, here's from the Daily Mail. Coco was filmed delivering a 38-word bulletin about how stupid mankind is harming the earth in the 60-second video. The 44-year-old great ape, which has been learning sign language since she was one, said, I am a gorilla. I am flowers, animals. I am nature. Coco, love man. Earth, Coco, love. I mean, right, exactly. You know, she's going to be making Hallmark cards before you know it. A spokesman for the Gorilla Foundation says because of her unique ability to communicate with humans in sign language, Coco is a natural ambassador for endangered species. We presented her with a script drafted by NOE and allowed her to improvise during a series of brief daily videos discussion sessions. The result was edited from a number of separate takes for brevity and continuity. The spokesman said Coco had to learn a few new signs for the video, including "you're an idiot" and "take" and "cut." No, I'm just kidding. A video including "protect" and "nature." Well, I'm sure an ape could quite easily learn an abstract concept like nature and earth, and probably spontaneously said Gaia. Okay, I've got another great story. Those people should be thrown in prison for making that ape lie like that. Okay, fury over plans to allow Beyonce to portray South African woman. This is one of the most surreal and craziest stories that I've ever heard. And I can't believe, when I first read it, I thought it was a joke. Okay, there was somebody named Sartje Bartman who was from Africa. She was from the Bushman tribe. And about 200 years ago, she was captured, and then she was used as a, they put her in sideshows or whatever. They put her on display, and they took her to Britain, I believe, and then the French guy bought her. And they used her, they put her on display because of her, quote, extraordinarily large buttocks and exotic features. So this woman of a fairly normal size, except when you, I got a drawing over here, of a fairly normal size, except when you get to her rear end, which is absolutely gigantic. And they've got her, you know, almost nude. But, and this is from the Daily Mail. Anyway, Beyonce, this is, all right, so Beyonce, who's this singer and actress who's married to Jay-Z, who's like considered the top rapper, one of the top rappers. Beyonce wants to make a woman, a movie about this woman, so that she can get taken seriously as an actress, and so that she can win an Oscar. I find that so bizarre. Anyway, Kelly here, and it's AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. Oh, and by the way, this lady, they came up to her. I don't know all the details about this, and asked her if she was unhappy being paraded around. She said no, and you want to be released? No, I don't. And then she ended up getting bought by this Frenchman. Apparently, she had a real drinking problem. And for a while, worked as a prostitute. Other than that, she died in her 20s. But Beyonce, what is the title of the movie going to be like, you know? Stop Staring at My Butt? Anyway, Kelly O'Connell, 647, and we will be back. I can't get you to live in my heart and broke, but tears are crying for you. there is a dense fog warning until Wednesday. So is this going to be like this all day? You know, it would seem to me almost, not to second guess Stan Rounds, but it would seem like it would almost be worth it to cancel school. It just seems so dangerous to drive around out there. I mean, I kept driving down the road expecting to see an accident because, you know, people don't know how to drive in this stuff. So I've got a little bit of weather news for you. I'm just kind of watching what's going on out in California. California is getting a lot of flooding. And, you know, with that drought that they've had, it is appreciated. But they said it's better to have moisture up north than it is down in the south, because in the south they have a much harder time saving it. They say if there's an inch of rain in Orange County, that will produce a billion gallons of water, the vast majority of which will wash out of the ocean. So if it's up north, it's collected into places like Mount Shasta, and also it forms the snowpack. So here is a little bit on this flooding situation, but we've got storms that are going to be working their way through here. Very interesting year for weather.
Flash flooding prompted this guy in L.A. to climb to higher ground in his car there. It has been brutal in the Los Angeles area. All that rain prompted the closure of many roads and major highways and freeways yesterday. More rounds of rain are on the way, and we're talking heavy rain and even the chance for some thunderstorms today. So here's how it shakes out. A very powerful jet moving in is going to continue to bring storms today and tomorrow. Now, the next storm will arrive on Saturday, so Friday we'll see a bit of a break. Now, today, the rounds of heavy rain are going to start right again in the morning up and down the coast. We could have a little bit of thunder today. Thursday is more of the same, a bit of a drying period on Friday, and then Saturday, the next round comes in. So through the weekend, not only are we talking rain, but we're also talking additional snowfall amounts. We could see up to 2 feet in some of the higher elevations, and then check out that rainfall. An additional 3 to 5 where you see that yellow just south of Los Angeles, north of San Diego.
And according to that map, we can expect to get some rain ourselves. But, I mean, this is surreal to look at some of the flooding in Southern California. All right, so there is a statement about El Nino, and El Nino is supposed to be stronger than it's ever been. We obviously could really use the water out in California. It's been a complete disaster. You know, I don't understand why they don't have more collection, you know, haven't built more storage areas in Southern California for when they do get these flash floods and stuff, because that would be a perfect opportunity for the stuff to go and, you know, get used. But easy to criticize. All right, so let me play just a clip on the El Nino, but you can see, and this guy, Ari Salazar, I like him. He's pretty quick on this stuff. Check this out.
Well, you've probably heard a lot about the El Nino that's going on right now. Now we can say that this El Nino has tied the previous record for strongest El Nino on record. You remember the last one back in the late 90s, 1997. There was a lot of talk about El Nino back then. It's actually kind of when that term started to become popular. But the one we have going on right now, you see it's very similar. Now, what are you looking at here? I know, I get it. Those are departures from average temperature of the sea surface temperature in the Pacific, specifically close to the equator. And this is the definition of El Nino. You hear a lot of wrong terms thrown around, like, hey, this is an El Nino storm or something like that. No, El Nino itself is when the water close to the equator in the Pacific gets a little bit warmer than usual. That is the definition of El Nino. Thing is, it has a lot of different effects on different parts of the world during different seasons. Now, the one thing we're going to notice the most from this one is it tends to make the wet season a little bit more robust out west. during the winter in the U.S. And this is really some very good news because of the drought that's been going on. We've had a lot of rain and, more importantly, a lot of snow in the high terrain, which is going to help us out during the snow melt with the drought.
Now, the snow in the Sierra Nevadas, I believe, is 45% higher than normal, and they're going to get 2 more feet this weekend. So this is a lot of great news. We'll take a break and come back and finish the hour. Kelly O'Connell at 6:55 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. All right, so looking at my other stories here, and so, all right, I've got a bunch of other stuff, but I'd like to do a show or two would cover a lot of these science stories that are coming out that are kind of interesting. This is from Eureka Alert, Eureka. It could be something to do with how people smell, but Eureka Alert, global source for science news, study finds frictional heat as a new trigger for explosive volcanic eruptions. A new study into magma ascent, in other words, magma or liquid rock coming out of the ground, by geoscientists at the University of Liverpool has found that that temperature may be more important than pressure in generating gas bubbles, which trigger explosive volcanic eruptions. And in a paper that they published, it shows that as magma goes up through the channels, it heats up, which can melt its crystal cargo and force the formation of bubbles. Importantly, they also showed that more bubbles are formed by heating than through decompression. And so friction could be, the upshot is friction has a lot to do with. So anyway, maybe that's not so exciting. We'll be back, take a little break, and we'll be back to talk about some really funny, hilarious things. It is 7:06. Today is the 6th of January. And you know, it's not too late to put down a few New Year's resolutions. I would, as a matter of fact, encourage that. Now, I watched something last night from Al Jazeera, the reporter from Al Jazeera, and they were saying the lady that did the report was talking about the she was talking about this thing with Peyton Manning and what the claim was, and I think that she seemed like a very serious journalist, and the guy that was in, I can't find it right now, and I had saved it somewhere in my stack of stories, but the guy that was interviewing her just sounded like an imbecile, and I'm thinking, is this what reporting has fallen to in this country? Is there, you're so many people out there that are doing the job of a reporter who are not, they're not very good. They don't follow their instincts. They end up defending the people they're supposed to be reporting on, or they end up attacking them. Either way, it's just terrible. But this guy that was interviewing this lady didn't really seem to know what he was talking about in terms of just this basic approach to the story. But this lady's basically said that we've got more than one source for this story. And so I'm going through my stuff right now to see if maybe somewhere. Problem is that I'm a lot of times working on this. I use Google Docs. I go to Google Drive, and then I save everything onto a document. And so it's between different computers that I work on during the day. So anyway, well, it doesn't really matter. You can just take my word for it. It was a long interview. It was kind of interesting, but I mean, at the same time, I don't know if I played the beginning of the Al Jazeera Investigates video. This is about 50 minutes, but I'll just play the beginning of it for you. And this has to do with Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning supposed. All right, so let's set this up for you. Peyton Manning's house gets shipments of HGH, human growth hormone, on a regular basis. Now, supposedly, the HGH is sent in the name of Ashley Manning. Now, two different sources, one of which was this guy that they had interviewed for hours, who had worked at this laboratory, had stated this, but also there was a confirmation from CNN through an unnamed source. So they said they're very confident that Peyton Manning's house got HGH. They didn't say that he used it, but the implication is, why would his wife need to go through an incredible amount of HGH? The implication is that it was for Peyton, but they never said that it was. Here's the beginning of this story from Al Jazeera. And this is called Al Jazeera Investigates the Dark Side. And it starts off with a box.
I don't care what we have to do. I want to win. If you're not first, you're not nothing.
Al Jazeera's investigative unit is locking away a box of drugs banned in sport. We've just bought them from medical professionals who say they work with top-level athletes.
Doctors, chemists, chiropractors, those are the individuals distributing the performance-enhancing substances to athletes.
Working with a British athlete, we infiltrate a network who claim their scientific expertise can cheat the system.
I can take a guy with average genetics and I can make him world champion. I can. With drugs, oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Over 8 months, our hidden cameras capture what athletes call the dark side, the secret world of doping.
Do you want world hormone?
you want to get bigger, faster, stronger, smarter, you want all of it, that's fine.
We catch the chemical mastermind and hear about players he claims he's doped to fame.
And I can give you some of these right now. There's a bunch of football players that take this, and a bunch of baseball players take it too.
I played with Cubs last year, and I've taken that stuff off and on for 2 years.
Go Broncos!
And extraordinary claims that raise questions whether an American sporting hero, Peyton Manning, is linked to performance-enhancing drugs.
As long as they know what the testing procedure is, they'll always be able to beat it. The only way that you will ever get caught is by an investigation.
All right, so that's the start of this thing. And don't forget, it was an investigation that brought down Lance Armstrong. He never failed a test, so there's something to what they're saying there. And there's going to be a lot of that, a lot more of that coming out. In the meantime, Peyton is still playing. They're using him as an all-star backup. But he was saying, or they were saying that, you know, he came into the game, even though he didn't throw a lot of passes, he was still able to change the tempo of the game because they had to stop focusing on the rush, had to move back and guard against the pass, and that changed the game. And so the Broncos ended up with the top seed. Anyway, all right, so, all right, switching gears here. I want to get into a story that I think is very entertaining. It's also strange, a little bit strange. But it has to do with, oh, okay, you know what? I did save this dang story. I'm going to play this too right now, just to, since we've got the topic up. Here's an interview from CNN's Money from this guy. I don't know his last name. I think his first name is Peter. He's just so ham-handed, but this story running here, and I'll play a little bit of it for you. But I thought, you know what, I was kind of impressed. I mean, I thought Al Jazeera kind of really moved itself forward through this story. And, you know, Peyton Manning didn't really even seem to know what to say other than to how can you publish a story that the person who they got the story from has recanted. But I think my guess, and you know, it's weird, but they put a picture of Peyton Manning next to his old self, like as a kid. And this guy's forehead, he's like a primordial beast. And I was just kind of wondering, is it possible that his forehead grew from this stuff? I don't know. He's like somebody from Mount Rushmore. Anyway, Here's a little bit more on the story. The reporter who broke the story, who put the story together on Peyton Manning's possible use of human growth hormone.
In the minds of some media critics, it's been a tough week for fledgling cable news channels. The first report suggests that Disney is looking to sell its stake in the struggling Fusion Network. That's a joint venture with Univision. I think there will be more news on that this coming week. And then there's Al Jazeera. This time last week, it televised The Dark Side, Secrets of the Sports Dopers. The network found itself needing to defend itself. Why? Because of suggestions, insinuations, perhaps, that Peyton Manning, who by all estimation will be a future NFL Hall of Famer, is potentially linked to HGH, or human growth hormone, because of the repeated shipment of the drug to his wife, Ashley Manning. Is this solid reporting, or is this loose association, a big black eye for Al Jazeera? I'm joined now for an exclusive interview with Deborah Davies, who is a reporter of the documentary. And I know you probably disagree with the suggestion that it was a black eye.
And we do.
Tell me first what you actually did say in the documentary.
Okay, so we have a man called Charlie Sly, who we interviewed for 27 hours undercover, not interview, but filmed 27 hours of undercover. So what has happened in this modern prism of social media is that you put a program out, which is one clear piece of programming. It goes through the prism of social media, and it comes out as multicolored confusion.
You're saying you said A, but some people say you said B.
Right.
What did you actually say?
Well, they say you say B, and when you say, actually, we didn't say B, they go, ah, well, now you're backtracking.
And that is what Ari Fleischer, representing the Manning family, says, that you all are backtracking from your source.
It's what he's being paid to say. What we said in the program is very clear. Charlie Sly worked at the Geyer Institute. He was not some low-level student. He's a very, very knowledgeable, well-connected individual who knows about drugs, has links to sportsmen, has a link, a family link to the Geyer Clinic. And what he said was that when he worked there, shipments of HGH were being repeatedly sent to Ashley Manning. Now,
Peyton Manning's wife. But he did backtrack from that claim. He suggested that actually he did not mean what he said on these tapes.
Well, so 27 hours of undercover where he doesn't know he's being filmed, no reason to lie, versus a 54-second retraction. What he cannot retract is that we got Charlie Sly through people in Vancouver who supplied us with drugs, who wanted to dope our undercover reporter up for the Olympics.
But that's separate from Peyton Manning.
No, hang on a second. They recommended Charlie Sly. They said, we're good at doping, but here's the mastermind. Go to Charlie Sly. We went to Charlie Sly, and he then told us the people he works with, the drugs that he supplied, and the fact that while he worked at the Geyer, shipments of HGH were going out to Ashley Manning. Now, on top of that, what you didn't know until now is that we had a second source, absolutely impeccably placed, knowledgeable and credible, who confirmed exactly what Charlie Sly said. Shipments of HGH were repeatedly sent to Ashley Manning in Florida and other places in the U.S.
So you're sharing that for the first time. Why did you not include that in the film?
Because, as you know, there are different kinds of sources. There are some you can name. There are some you can't. This is a source we cannot name, we could not name. The value of that source was to add to the level of confidence we already had
in what
Charlie Sly was saying.
Let me play what Peyton Manning said when this film aired last weekend. Here's his comment.
I'm not sure I understand how someone can make something up about somebody, admit that he's made it up, and yet it somehow gets published in a story. It's completely fabricated, complete trash, garbage. There's some more adjectives I'd like to be able to use, but it really makes me sick.
So what does he have wrong then in your calculations here?
Well, it's what he's not saying. He wasn't asked and has never answered the question, was HGH shipped repeatedly to your wife in Florida and elsewhere? Neither he nor his spokesman nor anyone else has answered that question. If that wasn't true, do you not think they would have straight away come out and said, this has never happened, no HGH has ever been shipped? They've never said that.
On the Today Show a few days ago, you said, but we haven't accused Peyton Manning of anything, only Ashley Manning of receiving these shipments. Is that right?
Well, what I was responding to were all these implications, insinuations added to the back end of the program.
Well, that's my concern, because I want to play a portion of the beginning of the program. This is a clip from the very beginning of it.
And extraordinary claims that raise questions whether an American sporting hero, Peyton Manning, is linked to performance-enhancing drugs.
To me, that is a pretty clear insinuation. You're saying that Peyton Manning is linked to these shipments, even though there's no proof of that.
We're saying we've raised questions, and those questions haven't been answered. If you look back at the scandals there have been over HGH in particular, the last couple, Biogenesis, HGH shipped to a dozen or more baseball players from an anti-aging clinic. We got to Charlie Sly through another scandal, a man called Galea.
Well, anyway, we pretty much covered that story, but I think it's only a matter of time. It's only a matter of time before Peyton Manning is in the news. I mean, I my question is, does he have Doper's forehead? The guy's got the largest forehead since Mount Rushmore, doesn't he? I mean, what's going on there? I just don't understand. Anyway, I got Jess Williams here, and we're going to come back and hear what's going on in the county. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. 523-1450, 523-1450, and we will be back to talk to Chess Williams. It's 7:25, and I got Chess Williams here, and these are interesting days to be in Doñana County, are they not, Jess?
Well, it's always interesting to be in Doñana. I've been there nearly 18 years, and there's never a dull moment.
But some moments are more exciting than others.
Some are more exciting than others. There's no denying that.
So what is going on?
Well, we've got lots going on. We've got a meeting this evening up at the Hatch Senior Center to discuss a big project along Trujillo Street. We're going to put in new sidewalks, curbs, and gutters. We're going to have this meeting with the Engineering Department and the New Mexico Department of Transportation in attendance to give people an idea of the timelines and what to expect as this project moves forward. Again, that's at 6 p.m. at the Hatch Community Center, or the Hatch Senior Center, rather, up in Hatch. And the county managers made a fairly significant announcement. Eric Crespin has been appointed as interim Doñana County Fire Chief. We had a retirement last week. Robert Monsivais, after 30-some-odd years of experience in fire services, retired. We wish him well in his retirement, but we also need to keep that department up and running smoothly. And Eric Crespin has been the assistant chief since 2006. We can think of nobody who would be better suited to do that. So he's stepping up to lead that department.
Who's the old chief?
Robert Monsivais. He retired on December 31st.
Okay, I missed
He
that.
Didn't want to.
He was forced out.
It was the way that the state reworked the retirement. It would have actually cost him money to stay on board rather than to retire. So he made the hard decision to get out. And he's still a young man. He promises he's going to stay involved in the firefighting community. He was just recently elected president of a five-state regional firefighters association, and he's going to retain the presidency of that throughout the year going into next year.
All right. So anything else interesting?
Well, I've got lots of stuff to talk about. Do you have anything specific you want to talk about?
Interesting. Interesting.
Well, the first meeting of the Board of County Commissioners is next Tuesday, and that first meeting of the year is interesting. A new chairman, we elect a new vice chairman.
A new chairman.
Yes.
What? Now, please don't tell me my hero, Billy Garrett's going anywhere.
Well, he's term limited as chairman, so he served two terms, and now he has to step aside, and one of the other commissioners will be elected chair.
All right. Is there any truth they're sending him to Elba Island?
I have not heard any of that. No, I think that he's going to stick around. In fact, he's hosting a community meeting next Thursday in Votto to discuss capital outlay and roads. That's going to be at the Votto Del Cerro Community Center at 6 p.m. Thursday.
Mixed drinks or BYOB?
I don't believe that there's going to be any drinks.
BYOB.
Bring your own cherry cola. It ought to be
all right.
But it'll be interesting to see who they pick to be the next chairman. It'll be interesting.
What's your guess? What's the inside information?
I don't know. I won't speculate, but I know that Commissioner Rawson's very interested in serving as chair. So, and I haven't heard anybody else express an interest to date, but there's, you know, lots of time between now and next Tuesday. So
who's the most Trump-like?
Oh, I'm not going to. You're trying to give me a gotcha question there, Kelly. I'm not going to go there.
Okay. So now we got a lawsuit that is percolating here.
The restraining order was issued against Sheriff B. Hill on December 8th to tell him that he can't take control of the jail. He's contesting that, and in fact, he's retained counsel and on a contingency basis. And counsel is going to ask for, according to today's paper, they're going to ask for a jury trial to determine the scope of authority of the sheriff as pertaining to the detention center. And the sheriff's attorney is saying that there is state statute that allows a sheriff, constable of the peace for the jurisdiction, to assert control over the detention center if he believes that he needs to do so. The county manager, on the other hand, and the Board of County Commissioners, at least the ones I've talked to, also are citing a statute that says that the Board of County Commissioners has a choice whether to let the sheriff take control of the detention center or whether to hire a paid administrator under the purview of the county manager. So that's the conflict. And the sheriff wants a jury trial. The county manager has asked for a declaratory judgment by the Third Judicial District Court, and that is a matter that is still pending in front of Judge Arrieta.
Okay, and so, but didn't they ask for more time to gather discovery?
He did, and there was a hearing, I want to say it was December 24th, and that's when the sheriff said he needed more time because he didn't have counsel at that time.
All right, so
he said he wanted to make sure that he had counsel, and the judge agreed with it.
All right. So there's the time that it takes to get an attorney. And once the attorney gets in, there's the time that it takes for the attorney to organize the case and do an investigation and do research. And let me just finish because I just happen to know a little bit about this.
Yes, you do.
And put your motions together. But you also want to do discovery. And so my question to you and just generally, are they going to need more time for discovery? Because discovery means, you know, exchanging evidence and related items.
I don't know the answer to that, Kelly. What I can tell you is Judge Arrieta gave the sheriff 40 days at the December 24th hearing. Just like Moses. So yes. He gave him 40 days to, and whether he will continue that for the process that you have described, I don't know. And I don't know what the fact that now there's this motion by the sheriff's attorney for a jury trial. I don't know how that affects things. I'm not an expert in the district court goings on.
All right. So is there a sense of pins and needles down at the county, or is this just another one of the
acts
in the sideshow?
I don't think it's pins and needles. I mean, the sheriff's department is functioning routinely. The detention center is functioning routinely.
Any chance that Billy Garrett could end up in the detention center at the end of this?
I don't foresee that. I don't see anybody getting criminally charged in this. I think it's an issue about who has jurisdiction, and actually it has in my mind, it has statewide ramifications.
All right,
about
so
who prevails.
We were talking about this earlier, and you said, Kelly, this is much bigger than it sounds, because in theory, if Sheriff Kiki's theory of the case prevails, you could apply this to any county.
Right, and I'm almost certain that if the sheriff prevails, that then the New Mexico Association of Counties would step in and say, look, if we've got this case in Doñana County, we need a decision statewide about whether sheriffs in any of the 33 counties can do this unilaterally.
I wonder how many jails are run by sheriffs already.
Most of the smaller counties are run by sheriffs.
That makes sense.
Yeah. When I lived in Taos, that's all run by the sheriff's department.
That's how they did it on Gunsmoke.
Oh, well, see, there you go.
Makes
James
sense. Makes sense. All right. Hey, let me ask, any other interesting stuff going on, the type of thing like the Hatch meeting and stuff, anything else people should know about?
Well, there's the meeting next Thursday in Botto to discuss roads and capital outlay. Of course, we're preparing for the onset of the 2016 New Mexico legislature. So we're working very closely with our legislative delegation to talk about what our needs are and to make sure that we're in the hopper as in terms of funding.
All right. Let me ask you this. How about a little bit of outlining of what people should be waiting for this in 2016 in the county? What are some of the things that are going to be coming up?
You know, I think that one of the things that we're certainly going to continue to have on the front burner is mental health and behavioral health issues in Doñana County. And it's really more than Doñana County. It's southern New Mexico.
It's the whole state, really.
It's the whole state. Right now, we have one hospital up in Las Vegas where we can put people with mental illness for evaluation. And it is so utilized that often you send resources, you send people and sheriff's deputies to take somebody up there, and they turn around and release them 12 hours later because they don't have the capacity to handle the number of people coming from all over the state to that facility. So now there's a conversation underway. The city has agreed to fund half of the study. The county's underfooting the rest of that bill to look at what it would take to build another hospital that's similar to the one in Las Vegas for southern New Mexico based in Doñana County. A lot of hurdles. This is a conversation about a lot more than brick and mortar. It's about obligations and the funding stream. Where does the money come from?
But what are we looking at? What are we looking at, right? I mean, we've got this collapse, the price of oil. How's that hitting the state?
Well, you know, it's huge in terms of the revenues to the state. When the oil prices suffer, the whole eastern part of the state is pumping money into our economy when oil prices and gas prices are good. When they go down, then that money is not coming into the economy, and it means that it's going to be a tight legislative session.
Okay, and so it would make it less likely that they would build a new psychiatric unit?
Well, as I said, we're in the early stages of this. We're studying it at this point, and once that study is done and we see what the real needs are and what the feasibility is, then I think it's going to be a political decision by the Board of County Commissioners and the City of Las Cruces Council, as well as state governments, about whether to move forward, how to move forward, and what the time frame for that project would be.
Okay, and what are some other issues that you see, developing?
Well, kind of tangential to that one is our crisis triage center. There's a facility that was approved. We broke ground on it in 2012. It was completed in 2013, and we've been trying really hard to find somebody to run it for us since then. There's some wrangling in the community about whether it should be a walk-in center or whether it should be only law enforcement that are able to put people in there. It was designed as a place where if you've got somebody who has not committed a crime, but they may present a danger to themselves or others, that there would be a place to take them, stabilize them, and get them referred out to the treatment that they need. But we've not been able to open it yet. And that continues to be something that the Board of County Commissioners is looking into. We're trying to work with all of our partners and collaborators in the behavioral health field to get a solution to the crisis triage center.
When do you, if you had to guess, when do you think that thing will be up and running?
You know, I wish I could say yesterday, but I just don't know. There's too many moving parts to that particular project. But the good news is the facility exists. Once we get it all nailed down, it's just a matter of opening the doors and turning on the lights.
Oh, that's good news. Okay, what do we know about Chris Barella? What's the status of his?
He's still on paid administrative leave. We're awaiting the outcome of that. There are criminal charges filed. I believe that the district attorney still has to make a determination about whether to proceed with a grand jury and an indictment process. So we're very in the early stages of that.
He hasn't been through grand jury yet.
My understanding is there is not an indictment.
Interesting. Very interesting. Jess, anything else?
You know, I can't think of anything right off the top of my head, but Happy New Year to you and your listeners. And I'm delighted to have been asked to be on your show from going forward and look forward to talking with you every Wednesday.
All right, man. And remember, any rumors that you have heard kind of off the record are more than welcome here.
Okay, well, I'll keep that in mind.
All right, Jess.
Thanks, Kelly.
Happy 2016 to you too, folks. We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE 523-1450 at 737. And folks, it's still foggy out there. All right, I mentioned to you something that was funny. I mentioned to you something that was funny and kind of weird. And it is this situation that's developing between Trump and Bill and Hillary. And believe it or not, Cosby is all being brought up together. Now, here's a lady. I don't know if you've heard this. A lady in Derry, New Hampshire, who is at a rally for Hillary Clinton. And she tries to ask Hillary a question. Hillary doesn't answer it. And then they interview the lady later, who is an actual a lawmaker. She's an actual member of the New Hampshire Congress. And very interesting, very, very fascinating. Check this out.
let's start with the questions, and I'll try to get as many in. Well, I'm going to call on people. Wait a minute. I'm not going to take your question because other people have been raised. Yes, go right there. Okay, let me see. Yeah, right back there, this man right there. Here we go, right there. You are very rude, and I'm not going to ever call on you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I asked her how in the world she can say that Winnie Broderick and Catherine Lilly are lying when she has no idea who Winnie Broderick is, because she told me this summer that she doesn't know who she is and she doesn't want to know who she is. And how can she assess that they're lying? That's what she told someone last month.
What?
And she says that rape victims should be believed. I agree with them. That's true. They should be believed and you should assess what they're saying. She doesn't even want to assess it.
Why does this issue matter to you?
Because I'm a racist black woman myself. Of course it would matter to me. And I mean, they represent this. I have constituents who tell me that they're drug addicts because they sexually assaulted them. How would I not care about that?
You're a Republican, though. Coming here to question her at an event, putting her on the spot like that makes her look, you know, not in a perfect light. Is that your goal? Was your goal to make her look silly?
I was a Democrat. I became a Republican because of this stuff. Because of what I saw happen in the Clinton years. The hypocrisy of so-called women that fight for women. It's the height of hypocrisy.
Incredible. So what happens? A lady goes, tries to ask a question, and Hillary lashes out at her. I mean, just, you're very rude. I'm never going to take a question from you. And then they interview the lady later. She used to be a Democrat. She's in the Vermont House. She became a Republican because she said all this stuff was swept under the rug in the Clinton administration. And she herself is a rape survivor. She knows people who became drug addicts because they were raped or abused and nobody paid any attention to them, so they turned to drugs. All right, here's Ed Schultz, the former MSNBC, very far left talking head, who's addressing whether Bill Clinton's sexual past is a fit subject for Hillary's campaign.
What is happening to Bush? Bush has been nothing but a torpedo on Donald Trump, and now he's saying that Trump has no chance.
Donald Trump, I don't believe, is going to be the party's nominee. And if he is, he's going to get crushed by Hillary Clinton. And I wanted to point that out. He said some things that are just outrageous. His views on policy have shifted with the winds. He is a strong supporter until recently of Hillary Clinton. And now he's the front running candidate for the Republican nomination. Someone has to call him out.
Well, I'll tell you what, Trump has called out all of the Republicans. Now he's focused on Hillary Clinton. The gender card being played by the Clinton campaign, this is the reaction from Trump.
There was certainly a lot of abuse of women, and you look at whether it's Monica Lewinsky or Paula Jones or many of them, and that certainly will be fair game. Certainly if they play the woman's card with respect to me, that will be fair game.
Are you saying an extramarital affair by Bill Clinton is fair game and something that you think should be in the campaign?
What I'm saying is very simple. If she is going to play the woman card, because I'll do more for women than Hillary Clinton is going to do for women, including the safety of our country, which is good for everybody. But if she's going to play, which she started about a week ago, talking about, he mentioned, and you know, the whole thing, playing up the women's card very, very strongly. And if she's going to play that game, and if he's going to be out there campaigning, then he's certainly fair game. And I think just about everybody agrees with me on that.
I think voters need to think about this. All's fair in love, war, and politics. Maybe not. Bernie Sanders doesn't think that anybody should go down this road. But not to indict the former president. But if there are some issues that arise after Hillary Clinton is president of the United States, what would the media focus on? What would the country focus on? What would the Congress focus on? Would we be able to get anything done? Would a spouse become a huge distraction to the process of what this country is facing and what needs to be done? I think it's a legitimate question, and I think it needs to be considered by voters. This is Bernie Sanders' reaction to the whole thing.
Donald Trump and Washington Post columnist Ruth Marcus think Bill Clinton's sexual history is fair game. Do you?
No, I don't. I think, you know, we have enormous problems facing this country, and I think we got more things to worry about than Bill Clinton's sexual life. I think, interestingly enough, maybe Donald Trump might want to focus attention on climate change and understand that climate change is not a hoax as he believes that it is, that maybe Donald Trump should understand that we should raise the minimum wage in this country, which he opposes, and maybe we should not be giving huge tax breaks to fellow billionaires like Donald Trump.
That is why when you hear something like that, you have to understand that Bernie Sanders has zero chance of being elected. I don't even know why he's in the race. 7:48, and we'll take a break and come back. And I've got another great soundbite for you. You're going to love it. About Trump and Bill Clinton and Cosby, believe it or not. All right, here is a interaction between Howie Carr Show and Donald Trump about all this stuff.
Right word today. But he's stumping for his wife in New Hampshire today. I just wanted to ask you, you know, the big headlines last week about Bill Cosby. Is there a difference between Bill Cosby and Bill Clinton?
Well, the whole Cosby thing is a weird deal, and he's got himself some big problems, and you'd almost have to ask Bill Clinton that question. It would be a very interesting question to someday ask him.
Well, you know,
he certainly has a lot of very strong charges against him, and that's pretty bad stuff. And it only got brought up because she said, "I have sexist tendencies, and I respect women so much, and I'll protect women, and I'll protect them, and I'll protect the whole country." I mean, she can't protect the country. She doesn't have the energy, the strength. She doesn't have the stamina. You need stamina. And you need a lot of other things, to be honest, and she doesn't have them. And I'll be protecting the country from a lot of outside sources and influences that I think people don't even know about. They don't know how serious it is. So we'll do a great job. If we get in and if I get elected, we're going to do a great job. You'll be proud of it, Howie.
I'm looking forward to it. Listen, he dodged questions today about his sex life in New Hampshire. You know, I think I said this last week in my column. I remember a headline in one of the New York tabs, I forget which one, saying, you know, about one of your girlfriends or one of your wives, best lover I ever had. That's the headline I remember about you. The headline I remember about him in the New York tabs was, quote, "You better put some ice on it."
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Well, look, he's, I guess he, you know, was brought up because of the statements. They sort of opened it up. And even the liberal columnists and the liberal commentators, the pundits, have said that, you know, he's fair game, because if he's out there campaigning, he's fair game. It's open. So it'll be interesting. And I guess based on what you're saying, I haven't seen it yet, but I guess they've been asking him a lot of questions, which I'm sure he's thrilled about.
And then there was a state rep, a Republican, who was heckling Hillary yesterday.
All right, so I played that for you, and take one more break here. I've got a little interaction with Bill Clinton. He sounds really old, and he looks old. He looks terrible. 7:53, they ask him about this. We'll come back and finish up with that. It's 7:56. It's rainy outside, and there was heavy, heavy fog this morning. It was unbelievable. And it's supposed to last. There's a warning on the wire. It's going to last till tomorrow. I don't know about that. But here is a clip from Bill Clinton. He just, I don't know, he sounds terrible to me. Check it out. But he's at an event. He's working for his wife, promoting his wife. And
Andrea Mitchell is with Bill Clinton. Let's listen in.
I love this place, you know.
How do you feel about the kind of campaign Donald Trump is running, sir?
The Republicans will have to decide if they're going to be nominated.
When they ask him that question, Bill Clinton looks off and pauses for a second, and it's like somebody behind Andrea Mitchell was waving at him or something. He wanted to say something about Trump, and he held off.
How I feel is only relevant once they pick a nominee.
Thank you.
We're trying to win a primary. We got to do that.
Thank you.
Can Hillary win this one?
Thank you so much.
Sure. Win here? Sure. But it's going to be hard.
What's your advice, sir?
I believe no.
Thank you, Andrea.
She's been here a lot, worked hard. It's all you can do. These people are really fair. No candidate who borders New Hampshire has ever lost a primary here, except when Howard Dean lost to John Kerry because they both did. But I think she can. You know, they've been good to us. We've worked hard.
Why is Bernie hesitant?
Thank you.
You just didn't sign this bill.
There's Andrea Mitchell on the rope line. Chuck Todd.
I love Andrea on the rope line.
All right. So the consensus is that Trump's strategy of getting rid of the female question by bringing up Bill's sexual history has worked. That's Blog Talk Radio for you guys that want to go back and listen to the show. We have a call here. It must be Frankie. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, this is Abigail. I just want to know, when does Walt come on? Because I want to address some issues he was talking about yesterday.
Tuesday afternoon.
Only Tuesdays?
Uh-huh.
Okay, what about Jess Williams? He's only on Wednesday.
He just left
then.
The building. You woke up too late. I got to go, though. I'm out of time. Call back tomorrow, okay? Thank you. All right. So Jess Williams just came on today. I didn't even know he was coming on, but I told him whenever he was in the building to come on. So anyway, if you got a point, if you got something to beef with Walt, bring it on the air, and I'll pass it on to him when he comes on next week. Kelly O'Connell, thanks for listening in. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Have a great day. Ciao. We'll be right back.